Hello and welcome to Tamron Recipes, brought to you by Tamron USA and Skip Cohen University. We bring on photographic artists as our creative chefs and discuss their great images as our favorite visually delicious dishes. The Tamron Kitchen is full of the greatest imaging cuisines and recipes in the industry, and we're looking forward to sharing those with you today. And I'll just say it, especially now, more than ever, with the COVID-19 pandemic, it's so important than ever, really, that we stay inspired as creatives, because remember, we're all in this together. So let's get to today's very special dish. I'm Shamira Young, and I'm joined by my co-chef and co-host, Skip Cohen.
Co-chef and co-host.
That's right.
You know, when we started this, I never realized how good the analogy of the Tamron Kitchen would be. And I want to introduce our chef today, our guest chef. We've got Jamie Malcolm Brown joining us in the Tamron Kitchen. And, you know, if we keep playing off the fun of our chef analogy, his diversity covers a lot of ground. He's sort of like the chef at the very best steakhouse you've ever been in. But then on the sideline, he owns a piece of a little French bistro in town and mixes up whatever he's making on a regular basis. So I guess I need to explain that just a little bit. He's a landscape artist and drone instructor with a love for weddings and portraiture. So you've got the extremes in photography in the air and on the ground with the need to be up close and personal. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. You know, as I looked at his images, knowing that he's covering, you know, two different extremes like that in photo, as I looked at his images, I figured out what makes his work so interesting. With his people shots and with his landscapes, he's capturing the personality of his subjects, whether it's the coast of Maine or a couple getting married. And it's just an interesting way to look at his work. But if you go to his Instagram page, you'll see what I mean. So, Jamie, if I haven't screwed up technology here or hit the wrong button, welcome to Tamron Recipes.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Yeah, so I'll just give you a brief history of me. So I started out doing event photography for a small nonprofit in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It was a indigenous rights organization, and they had Native people come from around the world to different events, and I was interning for them, and I was great with the camera at the time, so I took their pictures, and that really inspired me to continue on with that as making photography my full-time inspiration.
How long ago was that?
That was about 15 years ago. So I started out with a Canon. It was before the digital revolution. So I'm trying to remember, Canon Elon 7E, which was a basic SLR camera and a 50 1.8.
So wow. How did you transition into what you're doing today?
Well, through working for that organization, I got to travel around to different places like Labrador and Kenya. And wow. So I experienced magical landscapes. And at that time, I didn't know how to capture what I was seeing. So I really pushed myself to figure out how to capture that, but also how to capture the people. So as I grew as a photographer, I just kept trying to pick up new skill sets to be able to cover everything that interests me.
Having spent a lot of time in my life in Massachusetts, I'm just curious if you've ever worked with Lou Jones.
Lou Jones? No, I don't think I have. Yeah.
Okay. I know he's done a lot of work in Kenya and other locations in Africa. Mm-hmm. He's a phenomenal artist based out of, he's somewhere around Boston, Cambridge.
Mm-hmm. There's so many great photographers in Massachusetts that I feel like the community here is very strong, but there's still a lot of people to meet.
Well, if you think about New England, you've got so much diversity in terms of landscape and people and events. And you work, I lived in the Boston area for a good part of my life in my Polaroid days. And, you know, you've got the coastline right there. You've got the Kennedy Library, and then you work up the shoreline and, you know, you're up into Maine, and if you come back inland, you've got Vermont and New Hampshire and Western Mass. There's just so much beauty up there, especially foliage time.
Oh, yeah. Foliage is the prime time for almost any photographer. Whether you're a wedding photographer or landscape, once you get those colors outside, then every picture you take is golden.
Boy, is it ever.
Yeah.
So just going with the image that we shared in your first part of your Tamron recipe, it came out of a drone crash and you needed to shoot differently.
Yeah.
Share with our listeners what your process is when things just don't go as planned.
Yeah, I mean that was a pretty interesting time. So I've been flying a drone for over 3 years, and I've never had an incident. And a couple other droners in Massachusetts, and I met up with some droners from Philadelphia to do a foliage tour of New England. And on the very first day, I crashed my drone, and so I was without the main piece I had planned to use. So I had to pivot pretty quickly. So I continued on with them a lot. But there's some locations where a drone is the only thing that'll work. Like if you're in a deep forest and the lake is half a mile away, then there's not much you can do with your ground-based camera. So there are a few times that I decided to go a different way than them, and the morning I took this photo was one of them. There was a deep, deep fog early in the morning, and I actually went to look for a moon set, but I couldn't even find the moon anywhere. So I decided, what can I do with this fog and my Tamron 100 to 400, which is one of my favorite lenses to use for landscape. And I knew there are a bunch of trees that, if the fog cleared just a little bit, would look beautiful. So I drove to a few different places, got out, was taking some pictures, and then the sun just came out of nowhere and started to blast through the fog. And I had to scramble to be able to get this photo.
Jamie, did you? I'm curious as far as editing. How much editing did you do on this image? Because it is breathtaking.
You would think a lot, but it was pretty basic. I mean,
Very cool.
I had adjusted the color temperature a little bit. If I had zoomed out, there was the tree and the sun were this bright yellow color, like as you see in the photo, but everything surrounding it was kind of like a dark fog color. So when zoomed in, that's just kind of what you see is what you get. I adjusted the contrast to bring out the tree a little bit more, but other than that, it was as is.
You know, in the blog post that we're going to link to for the show notes for this episode, showing this image, I love that you mentioned that the long focal length of the 100 to 400 emphasized the layers and made the sun larger in relation to the tree. And you also mentioned that if you had gone with a wide angle, it would not have given the image basically the same effect as it does now.
No.
And just that, I'm curious about your process of visualization, because that is so important when putting together an image in your head on the fly and then capturing it how you want it. So how do you visualize what you're trying to get?
Well, often I start with my phone and I just kind of like will look through my screen and look around the scene and see what kind of composition might work best, but that just kind of like gets me started. So if I see a foreground that is really strong, then I know that I'm going to want to go with my wide angle lens. So I can emphasize that and then find the background that kind of helps that out. But if I really want to capture that background strong, then I'm looking more towards the 100 to 400 range where I can really isolate it from the rest of the things going on in the scene.
You know, it's funny, as you're talking about this image, I'm thinking back to a couple of previous Tamron Kitchen episodes, Tamron Recipe episodes. And it's interesting because both Cecil Holmes and David Akubian have both shared some absolutely stunning images that came out of a change in plans. In fact, Cecil had one that we talked about even before we started this series with Tamron Recipes, where it was snowing, and what they were going to do was just wasn't going to happen. So it's sort of like, you know, out of that need to improvise, it's just kind of fascinating what happens and what you guys as artists pull out when suddenly plans change and you've got to scramble or pivot. I love the way you had to pivot.
Yeah. And the way you talk about that, it kind of ties both the wedding and event photography with my landscape photography, because when you're doing a wedding or an event, you never know what's happening. I mean, there's moments, you know, okay, they're going to kiss. I'm ready for that. But there's so many things that just jump out at you and you have to be ready to react. And with the landscape, it's not quite as intense as a wedding, but lots of times I will plan a shoot and look for the right weather. And as soon as I get there, I know, okay, my plan is not going to work at all. So what can I do now and what's going to work? The clouds look like this, so where in the foreground is really going to work? And sometimes the plan works out, but most of the time it doesn't.
You know, Jamie, I find you really, really interesting because it's not every day, personally, I run into a photographer that specializes in landscapes and weddings. I mean, talk about two different animals, right? And so I'm curious to hear about how you handle the crossover from landscape to weddings. And could you talk about some of the biggest challenges that you have faced when crossing over?
I think the biggest challenge is figuring out how to do marketing. I mean, I'm just one person, and they're very different audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a full-time job just to market landscape and then also to market weddings. So, I mean, with weddings, I do a lot more word-of-mouth work. And then the landscape is really like trying to get my stuff out there. But it's a real challenge to try and figure out how to balance those two things.
And they're so different. Before we started this, you and I were talking, and in Chimera, talking about, you know, my perception, where one is very much an individual contributor, kind of, let's call it a job, because I'm going back to my Polaroid corporate days. You're out landscaping. You're looking for what you want. You've got control, at least over your time, and how you're gonna, you know, what you want to set up, what you think you want to capture. Now, Mother Nature may change all of that, but she's a lot slower to respond than a bride that's frantic. And as Bambi Cantrell has said, a wedding is a time when logic never reigns as king. Share. Give me some background on how you've developed this skill set, because it's very different. You've got a, you know, one, you're by yourself and talking to yourself and thinking about how do I want this and what am I trying to capture, and then the other, you're in the middle of chaos and you've got to build a relationship of trust. And it's one thing to have a relationship with nature, but it's another thing to have a relationship with a family and live bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it kind of stems from my family growing up. I'm one of eight kids. And so I grew up in chaos and lots of people around me all the time. So I understand how to, like, I mean, as a wedding photographer, you need to be in there, but you need to be hidden at the same time. So you need to not take over what's happening, but you need to capture it. But at the same time, growing up, I really loved being out in the woods, going for hikes, and just being alone. So I kind of have that dual personality where I'm happy in both places.
Well, one thing I've learned is that my wife was one of eight. And if I have my eye on that last pickle on the plate, I better go for it.
Yeah.
She is quick on that.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just being around the dinner table and having a meal with her, becomes an adjustment sometimes. And we'll laugh about it because when she was growing up, there were eight kids, mom and dad. So you had 10 people around the dinner table.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want seconds, you got to act fast.
Jamie, I'm curious, and this is kind of putting you on the spot. And I'm sorry about that. But do you have, can you think of a particular story, a wedding story, where something unexpected happened and you had to kind of pivot and adjust to that?
So in one wedding, which was a small outdoor wedding, it was beautiful out and they had like just the tent set up, small tent for everybody. Where the ceremony was all done, we were doing like the family photos, and the clouds rolled in, it started raining, and we really had to like work fast. We were trying to get kind of that drama in the sky, but keep everybody dry. So I had people just like scrambling around, and then we ended up in the tent for the last few groups, but it was pretty hectic, and like we really just had to work together as a team before bride got soaked.
Oh, and that's huge, right? Trying to capture that drama while keeping everyone dry. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I never really understood the whole concept of trash the dress, but one thing I do understand is the trash the dress has to be after the dress has served the purpose and not during the ceremony and the event.
Yeah.
Hey, let's really switch gears a lot, because this is airing at a time in history for all of us that's just totally bizarre because of the coronavirus. And I'm curious of things that you might be trying to do that take the downtime and actually turn it into something productive. Because the reality is, if you're a wedding photographer, especially, that part of your business has dried up. Although there's certain aspects of the business, like an engagement shoot, that could still be safely done without people getting overly paranoid, especially if you were outside. But what things are you doing? Have you found yourself trying to do to make up the time as revenue and business changes so much?
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a lot of changes for all types of photographers out there and small creative artists. I know I was supposed to be in Guatemala next week for 10 days doing some event photography. But that's just out the window now. So I'm going to be focusing on marketing a lot. I'm going to work a lot more on my website. I'm going to be recording some training videos that people have been asking different things about, like my drone photography, how they can capture and edit on different Milky Way things and just general editing skills. So I'm hopefully going to take the time to really boost those sections of my business.
And I love that you mentioned marketing, Jamie, because I think it's one of those things where, under normal circumstances, photographers tend to have a hard time finding time to market, or at least that's one of the many excuses that I hear, and that I've used myself as well. And now is the perfect time. I believe that even with the current crisis, there's opportunity in every crisis. And right now is the perfect time to focus on having a marketing plan moving forward, so that when this blows over, we can all hit the ground running at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I've got a good friend from my college days, and he's been active in health research in DC for years and years and years, and he made a comment that is kind of hard for people to think through, but his comment was that there are plenty of viruses out there that are far worse than what we're dealing with COVID-19. And his feeling is that, I don't want to say this is a good thing, but he said this is an important thing, because we obviously don't have the ability to handle it the way we need to. And in a bigger crisis, we would really be in trouble. And that's the potential. So I'm trying to be optimistic here, because all of us are frustrated. We're tired of watching the news. I mean, everything has changed, from sporting events to movie theaters to weddings, funerals, get-togethers. I think it's really important that everybody, take the time every day to be frustrated and depressed for 20 minutes. But then get back to focusing on the amazing things that all of you do as photographers and the industry we're a part of. Because the reality is that capturing those memories and turning it into something tangible people can hold is not going to go away. You know, the time to capture them may change, but it's going to make that time even more valuable, which is why I said what I said about, you know, an engagement session, I think is going to become a much bigger part of most wedding photographers' businesses because it can be done in a manner that's safer, that, you know, doesn't create a concern over whether you call it social distancing or self-quarantine, whatever you want to call it. So I think there is an opportunity here to find those silver linings. And like I said, I'm with Shamira. I love the fact that you brought up marketing because this is a perfect time to say, okay, when things start to change, and that's hopefully over the next 30 days or so, what do I do differently in terms of my business? And especially for you, Jamie, because you've got fine art, as you said in the beginning. It's very different. You've got fine art and one audience on that side, and you've got a different audience for your wedding and portrait work.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to be a steep learning curve over these next few weeks. And one thing I've been thinking about a lot is kind of like the smaller artists that who they tend to work in like the service industry, at restaurants, and that's how they fund their art. So they're kind of be out of both things for a while. So it's definitely like if you know a young budding artist, try and support them somehow.
Absolutely.
Great point.
And that really brings us to our next question, which is, it's a loaded question now more than ever. Jamie, do you have advice for new photographers who are just starting out, especially with everything going on right now?
Yeah. I mean, so as far as landscape goes, my biggest piece of advice to a photographer is get to know your area 100%. Like the shot that I took, I wouldn't have been able to do it except that I knew every single tree that stands alone in the area. So I could just drive directly there when I knew the conditions would be good. And if you're just in a place and you're just like hopping around not knowing what's what, then you can't take advantage of those things. So I know that, like, for me even, I love to dream about going to different places where there's giant mountains and different things like that. And it's great when you can do that. But when you're at home most of the time, if you know your local area, you can really capture beautiful images close to you without having to travel.
Excellent advice. And now more than ever, being outside is one of the few things that we're able to do. It's funny, I went out to the park yesterday and just seeing people spaced out social distancing, but running and jogging and walking, you know, being in touch with nature right now is probably one of the safest activities we can do. Unless the city or government deems otherwise. But even in places currently at the time of this recording that are under lockdown or shelter in place, I hear they're allowed to go out and walk around in nature.
Go for a jog. Go for a walk.
Great opportunity. Great opportunity.
There's nothing better to do right now, especially with spring starting. You can get out there. You can find flowers to take photos of as they and new leaves that are sprouting. There's a lot you can do.
And it's good therapy. Good mental therapy at this point. And Jamie, I want to make sure and ask, where can folks find you online to check out your work?
Instagram is a great place at Jamie Malcolm Brown, and my website, which is www.jamiemalcolmbrown.com.
Excellent. And Skip, what about you?
It's always the same. Everything I write is at skipcohenuniversity.com and Skip Cohen on Facebook, Skip Cohen on Twitter. And we always want to hear from our listeners. If you've got suggestions or requests, we work very closely with the Tamron team, and they're a very talented group of artists that make up, especially their tech rep group. And Shamira, I'm sorry, I was going to give everyone my email address, skip@mei500.com. Hey, it happens sometimes. You just lose your way when you're talking. And Shamira, where do they go to find you?
Folks can send me an email at shamira@shamirastudios.com. That's my first name, Chamira. at ShamiraStudios.com. My website is, you guessed it, ShamiraStudios.com. And we always, always want to hear from our listeners. So please do send us your feedback, your ideas. We're excited, so excited to be working with the Tamron team and sharing the creativity of all of our great chefs. And speaking of great chefs, Jamie, thank you again. This was awesome.
Great stuff.
Yes, thank you both.
Great stuff. Hope you weren't insulted by my comparison between a great steakhouse and a French bistro. Because the more I thought about it, it was more like Ruth's Chris and a Chinese restaurant. That's the gap there between those two specialties.
Yeah. Oh, no, not at all. I loved it.
Oh, too funny. And we want to thank our listeners for joining us today on this episode of Tamron Recipes, brought to you by Tamron USA and Skip Cohen University.